Welcome to East Meets West, episode 171. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Roger Jank.
And we're joined by Patrick Beja.
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
In person. All the way from France.
It's amazing what this airplane technology is doing these days.
Like all of these other podcasts have claimed that he's been on this weekend, he flew here just to be on East Meets West. No, Patrick was here for BlizzCon, the convention down in Anaheim, California, where all the Warcraft, Starcraft, Diablo players get together. I started saying Diablo because the guy on DirecTV, because I subscribed to the DirecTV live streaming, he kept saying Diablo.
Yeah.
And now I've started doing it.
You're probably going to start annoying a lot of people if you do that.
Oh, he was annoying me. But now it's one of those things where once you hear an annoying thing long enough, then it starts to get stuck in your own head.
I hear you.
How do you say Diablo?
Diablo.
Yeah, that's the way you should say it. Or something roughly like that.
Well, no, I just say that because, you know, when I took Spanish, that's how you pronounced it.
That would be right.
And how there's fancy.
No, yeah, and there's no, like, I don't know. You know, that's an interesting thing, actually, because I noticed that the English will really like mangle foreign pronunciations almost on purpose. And the Americans tend to try to like overdo it in preserving the original, you know, pronunciation. So we make fun of American reporters who, you know, speak in a normal tone and then go Nicaragua in the middle.
You mean they over enunciate.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was actually, I've been, I don't know why, but I've been very attached to the proper pronunciation forever. And I remember a long time ago, I was a teenager, and I think it was an Amiga game, which was Captain Blood.
Oh, I remember that one.
Do you remember that?
I tried to get it for the PC, couldn't afford it.
Well, I was very wealthy as a child.
Still are.
And my brother, who's a little bit younger, had friends over, and they were talking about the game, and they were saying, Captain Blood. You know, pronouncing the double O, ooh. And it made me a little bit, you know, it irritated me. So I went to them and said, no, it's Captain Blood, like very decisively. And they still mention it to me 20 years later. They're like, oh, hey, it's Captain Blood here coming in the room. And then,
well, but at least they pronounce it right.
No, they just do it blue just to spite
you. Just to spite you.
I think someone, I think it was an Australian, said, why is it that you pronounce it San Jose, you know, in San Francisco, Los Angeles, but you call it San Rafael?
Yeah. No, we do. That's true. We do our own manglings. I know in Austin, I ran into the majority of them, the examples. Guadalupe Street, Guadalupe. And even the Hispanic people, you know, the Spanish-speaking people, when they're talking in English, say Guadalupe. Half the time.
Yeah.
San Jacinto Street? San Jacinto.
Jacinto?
Yeah. And then Manchaca? Manchac. You just drop the A at the end. You don't
actually,
even say it.
It's funny. I actually took one of those SAT training courses, and one of the audio tapes had the word for a junta, and it was pronounced junta by the guy. I was like, are you sure this is the way you're supposed to?
See, then that's what I hear the English speakers, like from England. We'll just like forget it. We're not even going to try. We'll just pronounce it like English, you know, which I think there's an argument for that, because there's plenty of things that we say that aren't like France. What do you call France in France?
France.
France. We don't. Nobody says France in English.
Although
say France.
It would be fun.
Yeah. Or Germany. The name isn't even Germany.
Yeah. People.
It's Deutschland, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So why don't we all call it Deutschland?
Well, the thing is, for example, for Deutschland, you can pronounce it with the German accent and go full on like Deutschland, or you could just say Deutschland. Oh, well, okay, that doesn't work.
But we say Germany.
Yeah.
Well, because the name is different. Yeah. So, for example, I have people on the Fetus Club. There's a guy who you've actually met. Juan? No, Juan.
Julio?
Julio, yes.
Oh, yeah, Julio Aprea.
Yeah, Aprea, who... And so when I introduce him, I'm not sure if I should say, so that's Julio or just Julio from Argentina or Argentina.
Right.
Or it's. But I'm not going to say Argentina, you know, with an American accent or, I don't know.
There's so many different...
There's a middle ground, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
You watch Spanish language television, especially ones that are done from like Miami or L.A., and they're for a Spanish-speaking audience. But they'll pronounce Mexico as Mexico, mm-hmm. Texas as Tejas.
Yeah, because they're speaking Spanish.
So,
are Spanish words.
Yeah, see, that's exactly the example I was thinking about.
Mexico actually isn't Spanish, but yeah. It's an true. Approximation yeah, of, a, of yeah. an indigenous
yeah,
word.
Is it Aztec or Mayan or something?
One of the, they're like literally a dozen different languages spoken by the tribes.
But I guess the accepted pronunciation would be Mexico is okay. If you go Mexico, you're overdoing it a little bit, I think.
Actually, I think at some point it actually starts to sound like you're making fun. Or you're taking
a
jibe.
Yeah, like you're mocking.
Yes.
Right.
I wouldn't say mocking, but like you're trying
or
too hard. Yeah, exactly. You're
it's
like,
one or the
ooh,
other,
I know the language and I pronounce it properly as opposed to you plebeians who don't know how it's said.
I don't want to sound too presumptuous, but I'm sure you're aware of Saturday Night Live, the comedy sketch show. So they had Jimmy Smits on.
He has BitTorrents.
And they did a skit where he was a Hispanic guy in the office filled with white people, and they would over-enunciate every Spanish word. It's like, it's really annoying. It's like, really annoying when you do what? When you over-enunciate every word in Spanish that way. It's like, what? You mean San Francisco? San Diego? It's like, would you stop?
Burrito?
Yeah, it's like, he said, yeah, I would like a burrito. It's like, you want a what? A burrito. It's like, a what? A burrito? It was just really funny to take off that whole thing.
You know what? I'm actually French. Let's test this with the French words. How do you pronounce, for example, baguette?
Baguette.
Baguette.
But not baguette. Yeah. We pronounce it baguette. Baguette.
Yeah. Okay, so that's sort of the American way. That's okay.
Yeah.
You wouldn't go out and say, I want a baguette. That sounds, well.
Well, when you say it, it sounds normal. Because you already have a French accent. But if I went out and said, yeah, I'd like a cup of coffee and a baguette, that would sound weird.
Yeah.
I like, for about Michelin, this, how would you pronounce
Michelin?
Michelin.
Yeah. Yeah. Like what that? About French fries?
French fries.
Not pommes frites?
No, you say frites, actually.
Just fries.
Frites, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Well, what would you say, like entrepreneur? How would you enunciate?
Entrepreneur.
Yeah, see, now that's a good example even you can sound different.
Yeah.
Saying it properly or the English way. I think when you're speaking in a particular, here's my theory. When you're speaking in a particular language, it's okay to mispronounce, not mispronounce, but it's okay to adjust the pronunciation of words that you're bringing in to be more understandable in that accent. I don't think you need to say Nicaragua or burrito or entrepreneur because people are going to look at you weird. It's not going to be understood. And there's so many words that we bring in and change anyway, especially place names. Like Japan is not a Japanese word. It's Nippon, right?
Yeah.
So,
Nippon.
We have our own words for foreign things anyway.
Hmm.
It's really interesting to see kind of how, for example, a lot of words that are often taken from, like, say, a Spanish or French and kind of mangled over into, like, an Americanized English version and then just kind of reused without actually changing it back.
And there's different pronunciations between the various accents and dialects of English.
Yes.
Within, and French as well. Like a Quebecois is going to say something differently, so certain words differently.
We don't understand those guys.
Yeah, exactly.
It's really like,
actually, can you actually expand on, that's something I've always been curious about. Everyone who's said that to me has been like an American student studying French and went to France and went to Quebec. And I'm just curious to see, is it by degrees or is it by like a huge margin where it's an almost a different dialect?
If they make an effort, we can understand them, but if it depends on the context, the phrase, the word, but it's very possible that they will go through a whole sentence or even a whole conversation and we're not going to understand. Well, we might understand the context and what they're talking about, but we're not going to understand what they're saying. Not only do they have a very, very strong accent, but they also use very different words. Which ironically are very often American, words that are taken from English and used they use the French equivalent, where the French equivalent has a different meaning. So, for example, to say a car, they would say un char, and un char means a tank. So they would say things like, "I'm going to park my car." I'm sorry.
Instead of auto.
Instead of auto, voiture.
Auto. Okay.
Voiture. So they would say, je vais parquer mon char, which means I'm going to park my car. But
my tank.
it means like I'm going to settle my tank in French. So if you don't know these things, and that's some words that you can somewhat understand, but they have some words that are completely outlandish. And the funniest thing is that, I'm sorry, Canadian friends, I really love you.
French-Canadians?
Yeah. They think of themselves as very, very French. Like, and I'm sorry to say that from France, they're like those weird people who speak French, but not really.
That's interesting. Okay, I'm trying to think of an English equivalent. And when you first started talking, I was thinking the Scottish. Because there are people who speak English, but they speak it with such a heavy accent and have their own words that, you know, it's sometimes difficult for Americans, and even some English, I know, to understand someone speaking in a really heavy Scottish accent. But they don't consider themselves English in any stretch of the word, really.
Well,
I don't know. And then I was thinking of the patois, like the Caribbean, where they speak English, but it's kind of a pidgin. Quebec is pidgin French.
It's more like, in many ways, kind of the way English is spoken either in the Philippines or in Singapore, where they might use
because where they bring in a different language from the area and mix it in, and it has an accent. And
it has an accent, but they also, you know, from what I understand from Grace and a few other people, is that a lot of Filipinos learn English through watching American TV.
Yeah.
So, and it's as if they learned everything American through the TV, and it kind of ends up that way. So it comes out kind of like...
You know, that's actually the way I learned English mostly. It was watching movies and TV shows, and... people sometimes tell me that they can't really place my accent. And a friend of mine told me, yes, I know what your accent is. It's Hollywood accent. And I think it probably fits. But in the case of the French Canadians, I think it has a lot to do with the fact that they are surrounded by English speaking, you know, Americans.
And
Canadian English, which is
very similar.
I call them Americans too, you know.
They are. They're North Americans. They are North Americans.
See, that's
exactly.
For Mexicans and other people who inhabit North America, they refer
to... Or
South America. If actually all of the Western Hemisphere Spanish-speaking, they refer to Americans as Norte Americanos. They do not, because everyone considers themselves to be Americans in the sense that they're either South or North or Central America.
Because we all have such strong ties to Amerigo Vespucci, the map maker, upon which our continents are named. After which our continents are named.
You know, he got recorded first.
And then misspelled.
I'm sure if someone
to do American.
If Eric the Red had a huge publicity machine, it could be called, you know, Eric Land.
There's a lot of conspiracy theories about the name America, that it's actually like a Masonic thing, that it's not after Amerigo Vespucci.
Is there anything that's not a Mason thing?
I don't think so.
Yeah. The space shuttle is definitely Masonic.
The space shuttle? Oh, I thought you had a conspiracy theory.
Oh no, I wish.
All right.
That'd be funny if it were.
Yeah, so
when the shuttle turns around and you look at the engines, the arrangement of
you could find it is a monolith, right? It goes up on a big old plinth that you know.
It could be the all-seeing eye on the dollar bill.
Washington, all the Masons are buried with a big plinth, a big, you know, kind of monolith sort of thing on their gravestones, and the Washington Monument is one big one.
So I would like to reiterate the fact that we love our Canadian friends and our Masonic friends.
I love the joke because it's so not offensive that Jay Moore said in his stand-up routine at BlizzCon where he talked, he's like, oh, Canada, America's hat.
And of course, Mexico's America's beard. One question I wanted to ask you, and we were actually starting
to... So cute.
Topic was about BlizzCon because you just came back from there. Do you see kind of a big disparity or difference between people who play WoW from, say, like France or Europe or North America or like Australia or Asia or South America?
The rest of the world.
Yes. I mean, are there things that those players would do that would be culturally unique?
I don't think for WoW, I think it's a pretty homogenous. Mm-hmm. But when we were talking before, you mentioned video games in general. And at first, I didn't really see anything. But now that I'm thinking about it, I see the example of Japanese video games. And for us in France, where Japanese video games became really big in the 90s with the manga and anime and all that, it actually started in France, the export of Japanese animation. We would play the games and watch the animation movies in Japanese. And it always struck me that in the US, they only started breaking, really breaking, when they got translated in English. And I don't know if that answers your question, but I see that in the US, it seems like you really need to have it completely, a complete adaptation to the US market. Whereas in France, at least, they'll just import it and we would buy imports and play like role playing games in Japanese without speaking Japanese. That we really wanted to have the.
You had a little bit, at least in the West Coast in California, because there was a high concentration of Asians. So. It was quite possible to buy toys, videos, games, all from Japan that were just literally imported over with no translation. In order to reach the broader market, a lot of the companies down in LA and stuff decided to, you know, they did the dubbing and the subtitling. And of course, you know, that's kind of a big industry now. Anime purists, manga purists still prefer to have the original form, and then they'll either have it subtitled or they'll have, like, you know, a translation or a rough translation, but they'll still keep the original.
Well, there's region coding involved, too. Like, I don't know if it was easier to import into France than the U.S. I know it's difficult to get stuff into the United States in some cases.
Back then it was like VHS tapes.
Yeah, VHS tapes in Japan work in the U.S. because they both.
So then it would just be a tariff situation.
It was more difficult because we're in SECAM in French, so you had to transcode them.
We call it SECAM.
With SECAM. I think it might be an impression, but it got bigger without the adaptation in France. Like everyone in my generation, everyone was doing it. Everyone was watching and playing video games in Japanese, whereas. I think it was a little bit more confidential in the U.S., but maybe that's an impression.
I think it was just because the market for video games were already there, and it was just basically cheaper to take the ready-made product, kind of give it a new packaging. The thing is, early 8-bit, you know, 16-bit games didn't have any voice acting, right? All you really had to do was change the text. That's why you get the funny, you know, we got ourselves the bomb, you know, that little YouTube video.
All your base are belong to us. Yeah.
And
take off every zig.
Yeah. Well, you know, like in the U.S., anime, you know, Japanese animation was big in the 80s, except it wasn't called anime. It was called Japanimation. And a lot of that started
I think that started in France, that term.
The Japanimation?
Yeah. Maybe not. Sorry.
It started in Utah.
It could very well. I mean, I remember watching a lot of that stuff as a kid. And a lot of it was when... You know, Harmony Gold basically took the three Japanese properties. They took Super Dimension, Fortress Macross, and the other two, Mospita, and they kind of combined into form Robotech, and that kind of did the whole spinoff for American audiences.
Well, even before there was Speed Racer Voltron.
There was Voltron.
I think, honestly, one thing that might be at play here is in the U.S., there's one, maybe two languages. And back in the time we're talking about, there was basically considered to be only one language, English. But in France, you're in Europe where there's a ton of languages. So maybe there's more of a toleration of putting for someone to put something on the air in another language than there in the US. They're like, it'll never be a hit unless we translate it to English.
There's some of that, but I think the reason is a little bit different. Is that it's not that we have a lot of languages in Europe. It's that the dominant cultural force in the world is, you know, the American culture. Mm-hmm. So we are exposed to a second language. It's not Spanish or German or anything like that. It's English.
It's English. Mm.
So we already have a different language that we sort of have to get accustomed to enjoy these cultural products. So maybe that has to do with that, you know, it's a different language, be it English or Japanese, never mind, we're going to do it if we enjoy it.
Now, in the U.S., like, certain games do better here than, like, say, in Japan, for, you know, Halo franchise, for one. Are there any, like, French or European-specific titles? I mean, outside of, like, soccer, you know, football games, which are really good. You know, that's the only one I can think of. And maybe Rally Sports.
I don't really think so. The big franchises in France are, well, they were back then, the 2D fighting games were really, really huge. But I think they were huge in the U.S. also.
They were pretty big here, too.
RPGs, Japanese RPGs were really big. Again, in Japanese, which I don't think really happened a lot here. But
now it is. It's kind of a retroactive thing. A lot of people are like, I must play the original. For some reason, then they have the little cheat sheets explaining.
Well, I know currently a lot of times if you import if you get an import game, you have to have an import console to play it on. It just won't play on the current console. But I guess that wasn't such the issue back in the day.
Well, no. Back in the day, it was region-locked even more than it is today. Isn't Xbox 360 not region-locked?
It's it is, but like back in the Nintendo...
Only for movies.
Like the original Nintendo Entertainment System. Not sure if they called it something different. There was actually no region lock. It was just a physical construction of the cassette or the cartridge would not allow you to interface it.
Oh, that's right. That's
right. You
could
get little adapters, which basically were electrical connectors that would allow it to go into the slot.
I remember I was 16 years old, and I came to New York for like 3 days. And the games for the Super NES were so much cheaper here that we bought three or four. And we didn't know that they wouldn't work in France. So we were visiting friends from Canada, and we came to New York for 3 days. We went back up to Canada, and my mom, who bought them, realized that they wouldn't work in France. So they gave them as a present to my friends without telling them that, you know, we had bought them. She pretended it was a present. And the mom of my friends came to me and said, so did you buy the... She wanted to know. And I said, well, no, we thought they worked in France. So it was like a secret little thing that I gave up, and I was ashamed.
I still see a lot of tourists over at the Powell Street GameStop that kind of ask the workers, like, will this work in Britain? Will this work in Germany?
Well, it's so much cheaper. Everything... I brought a suitcase that was half empty. I'm going to buy lots of stuff here because it's so much cheaper.
When will we as a society get over that idea
it's
of
cheaper.
Like, let's make it one way one place and one way another? I mean, if I make a chair, I can sell it for different amounts at different parts of the country, much and definitely in the rest of the world. Why do I have to like make the chair not work in Japan? Why not just say, like, look, there's one DVDs will work everywhere in all players, and we can charge different amounts in different markets.
There's a meme there, like region locked furniture.
I can't sit on this chair. I'm in Canada.
I mean, it was funny in Australia. They actually have, you know, they sold quite a few VCRs, because VCRs aren't region locked in that they're, you know, purposely locked out. It's just because of the different television standards.
Well, yeah, you get PAL or CCAN.
But
or...
all the VCRs they sell are like NTS/PAL. Uh-huh. I mean, they're designed to work with both.
Yeah.
So, it just seems such a ridiculous concept.
Of course, it has to do, for the media, lawyers. It has to do with, you know, releases that they can do differently in different...
Well, I think with the internet, though, that release thing is going to bow to pressure eventually, because... But, All you're doing is saying, well, this part of the world's going to have to pirate it.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because most of these major film releases happen on, if not on the same day, within a week of each other around the globe.
Well, or do that. I mean, you do a show called The Movielicious now, which has you in Paris, a host in the UK, and a host in Arizona. How hard is it for you guys to coordinate on stuff that's actually out in all three regions?
Surprisingly difficult. Like, even on the silliest thing, for example, we reviewed Up a few weeks ago. It had been out for a month in the US, and I figured it would be out in the UK, and it was, so it came out a month later in France, but it's still not out in the UK, and we have no idea why.
That is so bizarre.
And it's a huge movie in the U.S.
Yeah. It's really a big franchise. And usually they tend to do these differently for smaller movies, but the big blockbusters come out at the same time. But Up, for some reason, the British, you know, we joke that they need to adapt it with like tea and biscuits and stuff like that.
Well, it's funny because, you know, I can
change
understand
all the spellings.
The language translation that they have to do. That takes time. But especially for markets, I mean, it's not like, you know, British movies get re-recorded back in America. I mean, they used to do that. It was really bad for certain movies. Like the original Mad Max, they dubbed Mel Gibson's voice with an American accent.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Because they thought his accent would be too exotic and hard
when
to
you
comprehend.
Get there's some DVDs that are out where you can pick your soundtrack, whether you want to have the American soundtrack or the original soundtrack.
Really? Still?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's more like a bonus feature now.
Oh. That's weird.
I don't. It's just so Up is still not a... Up in Britain.
Well, it's a little bit different, but when you redo not only movies, but TV shows too, like Life on Mars was redone for the U.S. market.
Yeah. Or The Office, which has taken off in its own direction in the U.S. But I remember when it first came out, I was like, why are they redoing it? It's so brilliant. Like, why start over? They were going to do that with the It crowd too.
Do you think it's really warranted that Americans would not watch it if it wasn't a British show, even if it was funny?
Well, see, that's the thing is, I I don't believe in that argument because AdFab
have they tried?
AdFab came over and
absolutely fabulous,
and it did extremely well for the Comedy Central. I mean, you know,
but that was a cable network. We're talking big old fashioned broadcast networks, and I don't know if it's just a prejudice or if there's really a like, well, this will be seen as too eclectic.
Well, I remember when they did Stressed Eric, and Stressed Eric was a British animation, not unlike The Simpsons. Except they had the character named Eric and was stressed all the time. But that was kind of the gag. Except that all the voices that were originally British voice actors redone with American voice actors, and it totally flopped.
Huh.
But, you know, like The Simpsons, South Park aren't redubbed into like British accents.
Well, Doctor Who is put on, again, on a cable network, not on a main network. But it's, you know, it's put on America as is.
You know why? I think this is the problem. Back in the 80s and 90s, the only time you could actually watch foreign programs unadulterated were either on cable networks or on PBS.
Well, even before cable networks, it was just PBS.
So I think people just, maybe they assume people just kind of get it in their head, oh, it's PBS.
It's snooty PBS programming if it's got a British accent. I don't know.
I used to watch Are You Being Served all the time, and I thought it was hilarious.
Oh, yeah. Same here. They had British Comedy Night on Channel 9 in St. Louis, and you know, they'd run Are You Being Served, Monty Python's Flying Circus,
Red Dwarf.
Red Dwarf was in there. What's the one with the Keeping Up Appearances?
Yeah, I didn't like that show as much.
And
Waiting for God was that one?
Yeah, yeah.
The Rest Home one, that was really boring.
Right. Oh, and Fawlty Towers.
Didn't get into Fawlty Towers. Blackadder I enjoyed.
I mean, all of these sort of, you know, came and went over the years, but there was always
Mr. Bean.
Yeah, Mr. Bean.
All these shows, I don't really see them becoming huge as the British version. Like, even Doctor Who, which is gaining popularity now, it's still in a very specific circle in the U.S. Like, I can't imagine people, I'm not going to name states.
They did it with...
Illinois, say it.
They did it with, what's that Australian show they brought over, Kath and Kim? That was a huge sitcom in Australia, and it was done with, like, these characters, Kath and Kim. They brought it over, and they... totally redid it. I'm not sure if it's they're not confident. They went through a focus group and it didn't do well, or there's some sort of union contractual agreement that, you know, if you do a original show, you know, in the U.S., you got to hire people.
Nah, I don't know. It's not that. They can license things all over the place if they want. They don't have to redo that stuff. They can definitely pick it up. But anyway, well, because, you know, it's all from production companies. So what a network actually acquires has nothing to do with the union contracts of how it's made.
But, you know, on the flip side, you also get weird instances. For example, you know the Mythbusters. That show.
Yeah, I know of the
Mythbusters. So that show was actually originally done for an Australian, not network, for a production group. And they paid, you know, for all that. But it did so well, they managed to sell it in the U.S., even though it was...
That's different, though. That's not that unusual. You'll have production companies in various parts of the world making programs for other networks and different networks. I mean, we used to pick up stuff from Japan for Tech TV back when we worked there. So, I mean, that's pretty normal compared to like actually having something that ran and was a hit in one part of the world picked up and put on the air in the U.S.
You know what?
It always goes the other way. They'll put U.S. shows as is on other networks, but not pick them up.
You know what
is
the only thing I can think of that truly went, like, you know, head over heels crazy in the U.S. that was not an American, originally American show was Iron Chef. Iron Chef was...
But again, Food Channel.
It's
cable.
True.
I can't think of a broadcast network one.
No,
I can think of lots of examples of cable ones, but not...
that was one that went mainstream. I mean, you know, Doctor Who.
Well, and then they redid it.
Yeah,
in an American version,
and it sucks.
Yeah,
but even for the longest time, there were, you know, until they made the American version, that was like 5 years after or 6 years after it came out in the U.S. On local channels. You know, people were talking about it. It was really mainstream. If you said Iron Chef Party, people knew what you were talking about.
All right, well, the commenting system at sabrilliant.com/EMW seems to be going like gangbusters. I think we set a record with 50 comments as of this recording.
Two of those are mine.
Russ960 says, I like the new comment system. Seems to work well for following those discussions you're interested in. Keep up the great show that creates so much wonderful discussion. Thank you, Russ. Russ and I got a little tiff.
A tiff?
It was a good discussion about...
Pretty
like,
angry at some point.
He was irritated with me for something I said last week, and then I got irritated with him about something the way he said it.
But mutual irritation.
I think we worked it out in the end, which was like, really agreed. What
Did
we
disagree.
Want to talk about is issues. And all these crazy things on left and right... are counterproductive. Let's actually figure out a way to fix the healthcare system. So, and that all played out in the comments. And I know Roger, you've been in the you've been in here a lot more than you used to be too. So please go jump in and start a conversation. So brilliant.com/EMW. Patrick, thank you so much for allowing us to hijack you and force you into the studio to record with us.
It was my pleasure.
And where can people follow more of your work?
You can go to Twitter, twitter.com/notpatrick.
And that's the best way to keep
in touch?
Yeah,
it's the easiest.
All right.
Cool.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you later.
Bye.